I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining us tonight. We're going to be talking about Catastrophe, which is a Channel 4 comedy in the UK. You may be able to watch it on Netflix in America. I'm not sure. You tend to be able to see lots of things on Netflix in America. We're going to be talking about Catastrophe. No spoilers, just episode 1 to tell you whether or not you should continue watching this. Is it great or is it a catastrophe? Thanks very much. Joining me as usual is Jamie Atherton and Matthew Wandless, live from London.
Hello.
So, Catastrophe, how much have we watched? Jamie?
All of it. And of course, the third series is starting this very week.
It started last week, you mean. Matthew, how much have you watched?
Ditto. I've seen all of it, yeah.
Wow.
Except the first episode of the Series 3, I haven't seen that yet.
Wow, you guys. You've watched a lot. I have watched episode 1 of Season 1, and I am nonplussed so far. So, set this up for me. Set it up.
Why don't you tell us what is your idea from the what is your idea of the premise from the first episode?
Okay, the world has ended and Will Smith has been left. He says, "This is a catastrophe," and all shit breaks loose. So, an Irish woman and an American meet, and they have a wild short-term romance.
What just happened? Did everyone else hear that? I just said a thing about Will Smith. Did you hear that, Jamie?
Couple meet up, have a whirlwind romance. He's American from New York City. She is Irish. And then she rings him and says, I'm pregnant. And he comes home, and the setup of this whole thing is going to be that it's a catastrophe. She's pregnant, and they're going to get together to look after this child, probably get married in order to do the right thing for this child. A lot like what has happened in Jamie's life recently.
Not really. It's a very big difference. I mean, I've had a baby.
But why did she stay with you? Well, she needed the support.
Does she look like Rob Delaney, or do you?
Does she look like Rob Delaney?
So the stars of this are Rob Delaney, then, and...
Sharon Horgan, is it?
Sharon Horgan, yeah.
Sharon Horgan, who I've
Both
seen
of
in lots
created
of...
created this show as well and write it.
Executive producers, writers, actors, wrote the theme tune, or etc. So, you're a lot further ahead than me.
What actually happens in the first episode? I can't remember.
I've just explained.
How far do you get?
Well, she...
Oh, that's all you get, yeah? That's as far as you get.
She gets pregnant. He comes back from New York... They go to the doctor. The doctor says that she may have some pre-cancer, non-cancer. And they have this whole funny scene about the number of times the doctor is saying the word cancer, but whilst also saying she doesn't have cancer. So she's panicked about that. An old, annoying friend of hers insists they come round for a dinner party. When they do
that's the
go
one from
round...
the extras, isn't it?
That's correct.
Yeah.
They go around for the dinner party. It all goes a bit wrong. They go home, and then they have a little conversation in bed about getting married, because in order for him to stay in the country, they will probably have to get married. Yeah. And that's kind of where it ends, and you get a sense that these two are...
So the first series, they're pretty much pregnant the whole way through. Jamie, refresh my memory.
Yeah, that's the first series is the pregnancy, and I think it ends with just before she's about just to give before birth, the birth.
Yeah, right.
yeah.
And then the second series, it jumps a lot further forward. Yeah, okay, cool. I'm just sorry to take that time to refresh my memory. I just wanted to make sure I was in the right spot. I could have done it before the podcast, but I choose to do it on air.
No, that's fine.
Live in the moment.
Yeah, well, that's what they're doing. That's what they're doing, and that seems to be the feel of...
So what did you make of it, Hal?
Well, I there was one line in it. Like, there was lots that was amusing. There was one line that really cracked me up, and I can't remember what it was. I think it was when they went outside and he took up smoking. The guy... What's our main character called? The bloke?
Honestly, can't remember.
You've watched three series?
Might even...
Two series, yeah. I've no idea.
Called Rob. I think he's called Rob in it. She's called Sharon in it, and he's called Rob in it. I think that did that to make lives easier for him.
He takes up smoking with the odd partner of the woman from Extras, and they have a conversation there. Oh, yeah, that's it. And he says, this is the first cigarette I've had in 10 years. And he says, this is the first cigarette you've had in 10 years. Give it here. And he tries to get it off him, and he, like, smacks his hand out of the way and goes, no, I do this now. And it was, like, a really good sign of the sort of internal panic that you don't perhaps see from him very much. It seems to be that she's going to be the panicking one, and he's going to, at the moment, he's going to be Mr. Smooth American, sort of making things better. That's how it appears to be setting up, but I imagine that's what's going to change. It's funny. It's funny. It's fine, and it's funny. But again, it feels just feels quite sitcom-y to me. It feels a bit like sitcom.
Yeah.
What is that, a problem? Is that a dirty word?
It shouldn't be, should it? It shouldn't be a dirty word.
No. I think no. It is a sitcom. It is a sitcom.
Yes.
I'm confident in saying that. When did you watch it all?
I watched it originally. I think I started watching it after the first series, so not long after that. So it started in what, 2015. So yeah, and
no. But the key thing I was asking that for is because I wondered if you've watched it since. You either got pregnant and had a baby.
I'm so glad you asked that question, because we have actually restarted watching series one with a newfound, even though we loved it first time, with a newfound sort of just enjoyment and what's that, Howl?
I said appreciation.
Appreciation. Yeah, due to having a child ourselves, it resonates even more so. But yeah, it's weird that you said that, because I was going to say that it's great watching it again in the circumstances I now found myself in.
We watched it, I think it was pretty much all last year we started watching. I think we watched it right when we moved into this house, which was in about a year ago. And I would love to know what I thought of it before we had a kid, because it was a kind of a revelation. Like, I couldn't believe how well observed it was in terms of like the scene with the doctor. We didn't have anything to do with cancer in our pregnancy, but we did at every stage just go, how are you this insensitive about all the medical staff who we saw? Because the way that they phrase things, the way they talk to you, it's like they're trying to shit you up.
Yeah.
At every single step. And, you know, everyone's already terrified that something terrible is going to happen to their kid. The way that the two of them argue about kids' stuff and about sleep and about sex after you've had a kid, it is one of the most stunningly accurately observed comedies I've ever seen. I thought it was I love it because of how well done it is.
It feels like that both Rob and Sharon actually have had these conversations, even though they're not a couple in real life. You know, they've actually really just sat in a room together and had conversations like this and just written them down, really natural, funny moments, just capturing. And it's a really hard thing to do, I imagine, but they've
cherry picked the really lovely bits that you can get, the really ridiculous things you can say to each other, and just how irrational you can both become when you haven't had any sleep. But I do wonder. I've always wondered. I mean,
I think you're right. I know how, the point you're
how
making.
Well, it can speak to someone who has who has no idea about any of this stuff.
Yes.
To someone who doesn't even know what it is to love.
Exactly. well, the
to Howell.
Yes. Hi. I think you're absolutely right, because when I say it feels sitcom-y, I kind of mean, you know, when you were a teenager and there were lots of sitcoms on TV and you kind of went, well, I'm not saying, oh, that's a great story, I'm going, that's a sitcom. And I think it leaves me the same, I'm as connected to it as I am to now when I watch a new teen sitcom, and it can be very funny and all of that, but I'm kind of going, yeah, I get it. So this one, you know, the smoking gag made me laugh, because that's kind of our age, kind of, sorry, my age, because I'm so much younger than you, kind of issues. The whole anticipation stuff, the stakes of it, that still kind of applies, I suppose, because they haven't had a baby yet. So there's a lot of appreciation going on from me. But not, you're right, not, and it's not a laugh of recognition for me. But then you weren't pregnant when you watched it for the first time, were you, Jane?
No, and I loved it. And I think, like, the sitcom comment is, yeah, I can see where you're coming from. When you first start watching it, it feels like a very conventional kind of show, a romantic kind of sitcom-y, you know, fish out of water, American guy, gets together with this Irish girl in a sort of a bit of a mistake. And but what punctures that kind of conventional sitcom form is the brutal humour at times of the show. Like, it has a real brutal, mean streak to the comedy, but they really works. Like, it's a really well skilled, and it's got a lot of heart in it as well. But it's got that skill of just being just outrageously, like, cruel in some of the humour as they go through the process of, you know, pregnancy and then having children together. It's remarkably good at handling that and not being in any way corny or any way cheesy or following some kind of formula of a sitcom that you'd expect it to. One of the best things I love about it is that the both of them have, like, Rob Delaney's a very, very famous comedian, and he's got a very strong, he's very big in America. He's, you know, he's quite a big
huge on Twitter.
Yeah, very big on Twitter. And he's got quite a strong, like, comic voice that comes across in the show as you watch it. But what's great is that she's got a really strong voice as well. Like, they're both, when they butt heads against each other, they're both really funny people.
Yes.
And they're both, like, really funny little characters with their own sort of, it's just really well developed relationship. You can see why they're together, you can see why they work together so well, and it's very well balanced in that respect. You know, it's not just a vehicle for Rob Delaney.
No, completely. I love her character so much.
Yeah.
Well, not knowing that he's famous, you know, I would never have said it was a vehicle for Rob Delaney. In fact, if anything, I was kind of thinking he wouldn't be cast in this if he hadn't written it. There's probably no way.
No, fair enough. I can see that. Because actually, I remember when it first came out, I was watching, I think it was Graham Norton, and I saw the two of them interviewed. And I thought, Jesus Christ, no way I'm going to watch this. I hate this guy.
Yeah.
And we only watched it because it was about babies. But I what you're saying, Jamie, I really agree with, and I like the fact that they allow the kind of more sitcom-y stuff to happen with the other characters, because Sharon and Rob don't really do anything, like, too outlandish in the show. I can't remember if that's completely true, but they don't do anything really, really weird that you wouldn't, that a normal person would do. They leave that stuff to I think his name's Chris, the friend's husband.
Yeah, the guy
Scottish.
Was just talking about. Yeah, yeah.
Who I really like in the first episode. I thought, what is this character?
He's my favourite character in the first.
But he is very good. Yeah.
In the later episodes, there's one where I think him and Rob go out on a bender or something, and some of the shit, it's just so funny, and his kind of brooding intensity that's so ridiculous, it's like completely unreal, is that they commit to it so hard that it just goes through being unrealistic and comes right back around to the other side where it's like, I believe this guy completely. He's just a, he's a complete freak.
Yeah. It's true. The supporting cast is brilliant. Like, there's some really good. Her brother is, I think, really, brother, really good. Yeah, character. Man.
Oh, God. Brilliant. Yeah.
Hmm. And her parents as
well. They're so yeah, funny.
And we should mention that this is Carrie Fisher plays his mum. And this is Carrie Fisher's. This was Carrie Fisher's last acting role before she died. So the third series, she's in the third series, and it was her last performance before she passed
away.
Why
should we mention that? It doesn't make it better.
I just think it's an interesting mention. I know she's
if anything, it probably makes it worse.
No, she's really good. She's really funny.
She's very good. She's very good in it.
She's such a bitch. She's
horrible. Good. Good.
But that's it. Like, it's right. The characters around them are very quirky and eccentric in some ways, and they kind of pull them in different directions and make the show what it is. Really, they, you know, it's just a it's a very rich journey you're going to go on, Howell.
Yeah. Full, is it?
Fantastic.
Because I think again about my sitcom comment. I think due to budgets, there's a British type of sitcom nowadays which has this kind of we are going to observe ourselves in reflection, which you could say that about any story ever to some degree, but what I mean is we're going to look at things like the situation of birth or the conversations you have with a doctor or the situation if you find yourself having a one night stand or and it's often small writing teams, you know, a couple of people have written it, we're doing, you know, it's maybe a group of students in a flat talking about being students and the interplay between them, or it's men behaving badly in another flat, or you know, old people in a nursing home.
Stop listing things. Come on, say what you're going to say.
So we don't ever go on sort of large canvas adventures really anymore, and you get that. You're starting to get that from Netflix now. So when I do go to something like this, it makes me just feel very much like I'm watching an advert for a Channel 4 show, which hasn't got much money.
Give me an example of a sitcom you're talking about.
Which end of the scale? Netflix or
the
Britain?
The opposite end of the scale, the Netflix one.
The OA.
That's not a sitcom.
Sorry, okay, not a sitcom. God, yeah, good point. I mean, Transparent is looking at inwards at a family, I suppose, as well.
Also, not
it?
A sitcom.
Well, it is.
It's not. It's funny, but it's definitely not a sitcom.
It's a situation.
It won't have been
comedy.
Nominated in any comedy categories. I can't imagine it would have been.
I would say that that is a situation comedy, albeit a...
That's absolutely ridiculous. It's a drama.
A drama.
Anyway, carry on. But even Transparent is...
Maybe that explains why I didn't... Yeah, no, no, bad example.
I think Transparent is like a comedy drama. I think it's got...
Well, all right, the Transparent thing is beside the point. I'm just trying
to point.
Think of a sitcom that is...
That has become the point. Transparent is a comedy.
Because you can't think of any examples for what you're talking about.
Alpha House is a comedy which is about...
Well, that is.
It's still about a bunch of people living in a house with each other, which is...
Yeah. This is what sitcoms do.
It's a large scale. That is a large scale. You know, it's set in the Senate, and it's five big characters with a big.
Alpha House. No, I have seen that. That's the one with John Goodman.
Yeah, and it's great. Chuck. Let's talk about Chuck for a moment.
That's not a sitcom either.
It's definitely, of course, it's a sitcom. The situation is a guy's got a thing put in his head, and there's a CIA base under his house, and every episode is a different adventure. That's the sitcom, just
it's
like
a comedy,
Only
action,
Fools
drama.
And Horses. What's Only Fools and Horses then?
The genres. Sorry,
what's Only Fools and Horses?
That's a sitcom.
I'm just going to edit out Matt one. The same Chuck transcends the genres and tweet it.
Yeah, just tweet. Trying to say is that I don't think the sitcom has ever really changed in that sense. I think that is what the sitcom is. It's a, you know, it is a situation in which comedy occurs.
All right, let me change my definition.
The premise is always generally pretty simple.
Yes, so I think you're right, and as usual, you're correct, but I'm also correct. I've just explained myself badly. So, for example, sitcoms have gone to the more realistic, more introspective as a result of perhaps The Office and Extras and what Ricky Gervais did. We're no longer in a sort of fourth wall someone walks down the stairs, you know, Vic and Bob's crazy one, whatever that was called. There's this kind of Channel 4 one, which is sort of, we're going to be in a difficult but very real situation. It's just, there's just not enough either theatricality or escapism to it on the surface. Now, what you two have described is, you know, that's why I'm drawn to that character that you were just talking about, David or whatever his name is, the partner.
Yeah, Chris.
That's why I was immediately drawn to him, because I was like, this is great. There's a bit of something unusual and strange going on here, and he's just really different and funny. And I don't get the feeling that it's been kind of commissioned, because we've gone, this is a hilarious romp about two people who have a child, and there's lots of people who've had children, therefore it will work. Now, that is what you've said is partly so good about it. But I think what you two, you know, you've stuck with it for three series, so it's got to transcend that quite a lot by the sound of what you're saying.
Yeah, and I think that's the best way to do it, actually, because I was talking to my wife the other night about Friends. And Friends is on a kind of never-ending loop at the moment on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
yes.
I find myself a lot of the time when we finish putting Molly to bed and before we have dinner, there's like a sort of half hour to 45-minute window where neither of us want to think about anything. And we'll often just pop Friends on the TV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
it's like you're living my life.
And me. And why do you think it's on every night? We're all doing it.
Exactly, yeah. And it's just gone through the rotation, so they just had the last episode, and now they're back in the first and second series, which is, for my money, by far the best stuff. And I think the mistake that Friends made, and it happened in series three, unfortunately. I'm not writing off everything that happened from series three onwards, but series one and two of Friends are golden. I think they are brilliant. And
get to the point,
that,
Matt.
It's just
Jesus.
They're a fun.
You got a point?
I have got. I've got a point. Yeah. And the reason is, in the first two series, the characters are realistic. Yeah. The six main characters are realistic, and the weirdos come in.
You think that's realism, do you? You think that's realism?
No, it's not realism, but the six main characters behave in a potentially justifiable and reasonable fashion.
Mm-hmm.
But from the third series onwards, they all become the weirdos who are spreading out into the real world, and they encounter the straight people.
Yeah.
And I think that is why that sitcom is less entertaining to me from that point onwards, because you don't believe anyone is real. And the good thing about this is that it allows the two core characters to be the sane ones while the world is insane around them, which is often how you feel when you're trapped in that kind of baby bubble.
Good. Yeah, I agree. I think I can see that, and I hope that that's what happens more and more. Because I was rooting, you know, in that first episode, her friend who invites them round isn't really a friend, and she calls her the C word before they go round. And you're rooting for our American guy to call bullshit on the situation, and he kind of does. So there's a sort of they are uniting against the bullshit of the world, and I quite like that. I can kind of see perhaps that's the direction he's going.
Yeah, is it the worry that you're thinking it's not going to be escapist for you enough, Howell? Is that what you're concerned with?
Yeah, just that, like, we, you know, as we often discuss, there's a lot of time to spend on something, and I don't know, the real world might need puncturing, but I hope that it's more about annoying friends and putting up with that shit than
sitcom
of doctors, you know, and stuff, you know.
There is a lot of the way they handle the bullshit of life is fun to watch.
That's a song by Sammy Davis Jr. It's very good.
Really?
The bullshit of life is about... Go on.
But, and I think that they're just very original. It's just... Obviously, there are things, you know, there are shows like Curb Your Enthusiasm where it's just everyday stuff, but it's an original voice telling you a different perspective on it. And this is what they deliver, is like, it's not nothing special about, nothing new about, oh, a couple meet up in a drunken way, one's American, one's Irish, living in London. There's nothing exciting about that, but their perspectives and the way they take on the world is what makes it worth watching and sticking with. And it's genuinely, it's just really funny. You know, that's the key.
Yeah, it's really funny.
There's some really funny.
Well, that'll get me through it, because I think you should ignore everything that I've said about it being too sitcom-y, because I think I've just realised what it is. British sitcoms are often starring comedians, not actors, and it always bothers me. The Only Fools and Horses was so great because those guys were funny actors, but proper good actors. And with this one, it had a similar feel, and it's the same as when I see... And we've interviewed Lee Mack, and he's a beautiful, lovely human being, but when I see Lee Mack doing a sitcom, or when I see someone who has written their own sitcom for Channel 4, and I go, I'm always going to be aware here that this is the writer, this is the comic's voice, rather than in Friends, in those first two series, you're buying those performances, they're really good comic actors, rather than the kind of, than what I've just described. I think that's the other thing that I recognise immediately, and I go, like I said before, you know, would Rob have been cast in this part? Would they have been casting this normally if this wasn't a sort of homegrown thing? And that's not a bad thing. That's my issues. It's not a bad thing. God forbid that we should stop people being able to create things and star in them. But I've always had a bit of an issue.
I know what you mean. There is a tendency to just Jamie mentioned it earlier, to just create vehicles for people.
Yeah.
And people who probably maybe shouldn't be performing their own work, just write it. Yeah. Just be content with that. Mm-hmm. Because there are examples, and Lee Mack is a classic one. I think he's dreadful in that show.
I think he's a very funny guy. Like,
he's very hilarious, funny guy.
I've seen him live. Brilliant. He's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. But I do think Not Going Out is a show we won't be spending too much time on the podcast.
Again, it's that thing of you will get a series commissioned if you star in it, Lee, not if you write it. And these guys will get a commission if they go, look, we're writers, we are quite famous, and we will star in it. You know, it's that eking process that I just can see through. You know,
I think there's a lot of really good stuff coming from original people at the moment. Like, you know, Aziz Ansari doing his comedy on Netflix. What's it called again?
Master
of None.
There's going to be a second series of that, by the way.
There is, there is going to be one. Sure when.
Kimmy Schmidt.
Donald Glover, go on.
Donald Glover's Atlanta, which we should do at some point.
I haven't seen that. Is that available on something?
I think it should be available on Amazon, but I'd have to check.
Kimmy Schmidt's got another one starting soon. That's a good example. Tina Fey could have played Kimmy, you know, put herself in the bunker for another 10 years. She could have done, but she didn't. She found a really good part. Anyway, that's by the by. These are the issues. This is the whiff that I have to be persuaded to get beyond. That's the issue with this one for me. Is just I'm going, okay, I get it. There's some funny moments, all of that. Can I be bothered investing? It's not put a big fish hook in my mouth, but. If you have had a child, I imagine this would be a great idea to watch.
See, no, I do think it's good for that, but I watched it before all of that, and it's you don't need to relate to everything you see in this show. You don't need to have that experience to really enjoy it, so you don't need to worry about that perspective too much.
But it might get you over the first hurdle a bit quicker. You might not need this podcast.
Possibly it will, but at the same time, like, I on its own, you know, all right, it's great going back and watching it and related to it in a different way, but when I first watched it, you know, it's a relationship. People, everyone out there has had some kind of relationship. It's got that, we can all relate to that from a starting point.
Matt hasn't.
So there
what? I have.
No, you haven't.
I've loads of them.
All of yours. Look, any relationship that involves a lock and a key is not a real relationship, right?
They're very happy down there. Stockholm syndrome really set in. They love me.
Good. All
so
right.
What
then.
Are you doing? Well, the point is, Howell, are you going to carry on watching? Give us the verdict. You sound to me like you're going to go. Yeah, all right.
This is so against. It's going to be really difficult because I watched this on my own without Sarah. So this is a big investment of time. If she doesn't want to go, either I've got to watch the first one again.
You know, this is, I know Sarah, obviously, I think Sarah will really like this because she's got a humour that is quite harsh at times, and I think it'd suit her style, what if it, her enjoyment of stuff.
What if it,
it's lovely and dark.
What if it makes her want a child, though? I mean, that's... Tough.
Are you guys not thinking about having kids?
No. Well, she started to very much enjoy hanging out with kids. And we've gone from, like, never in a million years, ever, 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 I'd rather eat a nuclear bomb to, like, maybe.
Yeah, that's how they get you. That's how they get you.
Yeah, I need to sort my life out first, though. You know, I've not got the... financial or physical ability to look after another human being.
A load of rabbits to look after.
Exactly, shitloads of them.
That's the point, isn't it? Yeah, you got your rabbits.
Yeah. Anyway, good.
You can't have your rabbit hotel and a baby. I was going to say that right now. Well, you can try it, but it's going to be hell.
Well, if we got rid of the rabbits, we'd have a load of spare hutches to put the baby in, though. So
that's a good point.
Quiet in that garage. All right. Well, thanks, and I will. Yes, I will. I'll do the four. I'll do the four episodes.
You won't regret it. Start again with Sarah. Right. You will not regret this show.
Okay.
You know, it's one of those. It's a stone cold guarantee of success. I think a show like this.
Right.
I see why anyone wouldn't get any enjoyment out of it.
Have either of you not done Girls?
I haven't watched it for a while, but
be good to get a free. I bet Jack hasn't.
Well, I think we should do Girls. I am powering through it. I'm catching up, and I put it aside for years, and I think there's a very interesting discussion there to have, particularly between us people of penis, as to why we didn't hook ourselves into it.
I did as well.
Aren't we just fucking perfect, huh?
Yep.
With our bloody children and our bloody feminist attitudes and our beards.
Yeah. I'm surprised we haven't done Girls. Yeah, we should definitely do Girls, and because it's the final series as well. Yeah.
Oh, dear. I'm not quite sure what he said. I just caught the giggle afterwards, which was more creepy. All right, if you want to email us,
I'd love to do Girls.
Okay.
Let's take a really long, hard look at Girls.
Jesus Christ. studio@theboxsetpod.com if you would like to email us. studio@theboxsetpod.com. Have you had a child? Have you watched Catastrophe? And do you class your child as a catastrophe? Please let us know now. studio@theboxsetpod.com, and we'll see you next week. Bon voyage. I've never ended a podcast with Bon Voyage before.
Yeah, I like it.
I know.
It's a bit different.
Yeah. What other possible endings could we have?
Arrivederci.
Arrivederci.
Yeah.
Let's not say goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Let's just say adieu.
Adieu.